Hail Varsity Magazine presents the Hail Varsity Radio Show, the authority on all things Huskers. Spanning across the state, no one else talks Huskers like Hail Varsity.
Hey, Van Day!
Hey, Van Day!
We get better and better!
We get better and better!
We get beat, beat!
We get beat, beat!
Bro, beat, beat!
Bro, beat, beat!
Varsity Radio Show, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Here are your hosts, Chris Schmidt and former Blackshirt Jay Moore.
This is kind of carries a little bit more of some juice here for sure. It's going to be exciting.
Oh, that grin still in my mind's eye. Mike Riley, spring football 2017. He talked to the media today. You'll hear from the coach. Welcome to Wednesday on Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, Blackshirt, Husker, NFLer Jay Moore, Mr. TJ Henning, doing his best Eddie Vedder with some plaid today. Well played. Eddie Vedder is our lead singer of Pearl Jam, making sure.
I knew that one.
Okay, it's not quite an 80s reference, but a 90s reference.
And Willie Nelson, he would rock plaid too, right?
When doesn't he? We're talking plaid top, plaid boxers, assuming he doesn't go commando on Wednesdays, and leather vest. Your chance at Willie Nelson tickets. Jay Moore almost threw up at his mouth thinking of Willie Nelson going commando. Listen, lot to get to. Wilderness Ridge Golf segment in 40 minutes. Our favorite Uncle Jerry, Jerry DiNardo, at 525. Lots of room for you. 466-3776. 466-3776. Toll free 1-800-825-5865. On Twitter at Hail Varsity, at Schmidt underscore radio, and at JMoore44 at TJ underscore Henning. Jay will give his take on the depth chart. Jay will give his take on some of the thoughts defensively. And there are some big-time themes that came through today with Mike Riley. Priorities for spring, priorities for the defense, priorities at quarterback, and a lot to spend some time on with that. So you mentioned and heard the exciting part from Mike Riley, but Riley is kind of rolling his sleeves up, and this comment, the Force one, no Star Wars reference, is one of many that stuck out to me. Mike Riley on what their plan is when it comes to their running game attitude and identity. Run the ball, guy. Bathe in this.
We're going to force our will on you running this play. It's not going to disappear.
Play it again.
We're going to force our will on you running this play. It's not going to disappear.
Give me a hat trick.
We're going to force our will on you running this play. It's not going to disappear.
That was awesome. That was tremendous. Jay, can it happen?
I don't know. I'll believe it when I see it.
Okay.
Yeah.
You're here to do something on my parade.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Let me
describe the scene here.
Lot.
I'm playing this. I'm smiling. I'm flexing. Okay, you're gonna run the football with some authority. TJ smiling, and Bird, Jay Moore, you're giving me that 6,000-yard stare.
Well, it's easy to say. I mean, it's easy to do that when you're up by three scores in 6 or 7 minutes left in the ball game. You're going 4-minute drill. It's easy to do that, but you're chasing points here. You know, trying to come from behind. That's not gonna happen. It's just, you know, it just depends on the scenario. You know, early in the game, maybe. Mm-hmm. But, you know, again, it can differentiate a lot of different ways, but I don't buy it.
Okay.
I don't buy it. I mean, I want to see it. I want to buy it. But
he wants to sell it.
I know. He does.
I mean,
but
he wants
again,
it too.
Again, it just, every game plays out differently.
Okay.
Every game is a different scenario. So, like I said, yeah, if you're up by 14, 17 points with a few minutes left, it's easy to do.
Plus, Jay, the first 2 years of this Mike Riley era, have you seen any semblance of that?
Not really.
Let's talk run game for a second. You've seen the 4-minute drill, and you've seen them against bad teams ice it away. Okay, it was a step forward from losing to bad
correct.
teams, 15-16.
Very correct.
What'd you do to Indiana? What'd you do to Illinois? You ran the football. You held the football. You cranked out yards. You rarely put it in the air. Mm-hmm. You ran the football to win. Now, when push came to shove, post-Wisconsin, ghost.
Right, but my biggest thing is Langsdorf-Riley, has that ever been their identity?
You know, I mean, I think with the Quiz Rogers and who's the dude? Simonton? Was that
Oregon State passed and you know my adult.
I think Simonton might have been post right. I got to get my Oregon State facts right. Point is they've had years where they've had running backs hit a grand.
I mean they had Steven Jackson.
Thank you, Steven. Boom. When you have Steven Jackson, they're running the football.
Right. Yeah, he's one of the best. I mean, at his prime, he's top five running back in the NFL.
Right.
Yeah, I would too. But it's
personnel then.
But what's your trust? I mean, again. Trust level and offensive line, you know, it's just there's a lot. Hell, I want to you know, play in the U.S. Open this year, but is that realistic? Not at all.
Well, you can go.
I'm going to the Masters.
I know you are. We're going to the Masters. you can go to the U.S. Open. Are you playing in it? Okay, this was a point I want to start with and kind of coincides with a Sports Illustrated article today. That article being coaches that need to have big years in their third year. Your friend Mike Riley made the list and the expectations are there. The fan base is mentioned and it's kind of a badge of honor about how demanding you are. Two standards and championships. That's a reality. Year three, it's got to be better than 9-4, or you got to have better wins than you had in 2016. So let's talk about the transition that is a fact. Defense, quarterback, staff. Okay? That's a fact. That is new. You have time to teach, get comfortable, and smooth out the rough edges for a very aggressive 2017. But the fan base, the patience, is that were these moves made to buy yourself some more time and the fans need to be patient? Sip asked the question. Here's the response. Three, my bad.
I didn't do any of this, what we're doing, to have a setback. You know, I did, you know, so I'm doing it hopefully to get better. So I'm not looking for any of that.
So Riley not looking for the patience thing. He made moves, so 2017 is way different with the games you need to win than they were in 2016. I loved the answer. I loved the tone of the answer. Again, show me. But I loved the answer, and he's staring it expectations in the eye. He's staring it straight in the eye, and this is not a reset out of convenience to kind of feed the Bears a little bit so they'll stay off your front porch. This was done to get better. And I want your response to that sound, Jaybird and TJ, because I think that's been kind of floated out there. Well, it is new. It is a new quarterback. It's a new defense. It's a new defensive coordinator. And, well, hell, that's tough for anybody. So don't freak out if 17 isn't great. He's like, no, I'm trying to be awesome in 2017. We did this to get better. I buy it, and I love the response.
Well, without a doubt. I mean, I believe that, but I still think, I mean, I'm not going to be, you know, delusional and think that it's going to be just, you know, cooking with gas when this thing kicks off in 2015. There's going to be some. I still think there's going to be some growing pains. I've taken part in a 3-4. All I did was, you know, you played in a 4-3. Dude, it takes time. It takes time to understand. Now, I don't know Diaco's system. I don't know if it was as intricate as some of the systems I had been involved in or the defensives. I don't know. But I know it's for a fact it's going to be hard. You want to go to those guys who are now, you know, the field side. Mm-hmm. I can't remember the depth chart that came out today, but those guys who are playing defensive ends, the Cedric Kings and those guys, you know what? They are standing up. They are dropping into coverage. It'd be a little easier transition if we actually zone blitzed as a defense with Baker. Baker never zone blitzed. Those guys never dropped into coverage. Now, they might have practiced some of it, but to what extent? They obviously didn't practice that much if they never
used.
Yeah, if it wasn't used. So I'm just looking at the depth chart here, and those guys, the Cedric Kings, those guys, I mean, they're going to have to learn. I mean, Alex Davis, those guys are going to have to learn coverages, communication, where as defensive lineman, you're kind of more
set the edge, stop the run, contain,
but you're listening for calls. Now your formation recognition, communicating with that linebackers, communicating with the safety, communicating with the corner on some coverages. This is a whole new ball game now. They're gonna have to learn.
So you're playing the game of telephone and you're hoping everyone understands everyone.
Correct. Now, but I don't know.
You can't be Mandarin Chinese. You're speaking.
Yes. No. Yeah. You cannot. So there's going to be some growing pains. But luckily, you got 15 spring ball practices. They've kind of tweaked the way they handle the off season, the summer. So that I think they can meet with coaches now, so mm-hmm. they can get more use there. But honestly, I think for most guys, I myself included, I learned the best during walkthroughs. You got to do live. You can't get up on a dry erase board and draw it up and say, okay, when you see trips over here into the boundary or this, and you're in this coverage,
you need to physically do.
Yeah, some people might do it, can compartmentalize all that and transfer it there. I couldn't. I don't know a lot of guys who can. There's a few that could, but you need to get out there and see it live. And that's a different thing. They might show you this and they motion to it. Well, you know, what the hell are you going to do when you only have a split second? You got to be able to recognize hand signals, get all that stuff so everyone's on the same page. That's going to take time. And all of a sudden, yeah, you do it in the spring game. Yeah, you do it in fall practice. But all of a sudden, you're doing it against someone else in front of 90,000. That mind's racing a little bit. That heart's beating a little faster. You're a little more tired. You haven't played a game in a while. How are you going to react? And you don't know. So, yeah, you want to get better. I think they will get better. I think Nebraska is built for this defense. I think the guys they have already on the roster is built for the 3-4, other than my disagreements of putting Mick Stoltenberg at the nose. But, again, don't know what other options they have at that position. But I like the way this team's set up for this type of defense. And if this can – listen, if this can get them better and take care of some issues with speed, get more athletic, I'm all for it. I just think there's still going to be some hiccups. You're never going to play a perfect game now. You're never going to have – you know, out of 75 snaps, you're never going to be grayed out at like 90-some%. That's just not – you want to get to that. You're going to have busts no matter what, even if you played the same defense and did the same things for 5, 6, 7 years.
Even if you know what the hell you're doing, you're going to make mistakes.
It's going to happen.
I want to get your take on this, and maybe you think I'm crazy. TJ was on the fence about it, but we talked kind of confidence and concerns yesterday. And you just laid out a myriad of oh-no moments – potentially with this defense, because it happens in a defense like this, in a transition like this. I feel better about the defense than I do the offense. And that's not a knock on the quarterback, whoever wins that. My bigger concern is offensive line compared to what they're being asked to do in this 3-4. I think you got enough dudes to pick from defensively. Perello will get the guys coached up on the defensive line, and your strength mm-hmm. is that secondary. New coaches. We'll hear from Riley here coming up here next segment on how things have all meshed with new faces in new offices and a new coordinator with some holdovers. But I just feel better about what can be taught, understood, and then executed on the defensive side compared to what I've seen on the offensive line. The offensive line can get better. They can find 8 dudes that are tough and ready to go. They can find 8 dudes, and I'm talking about a rotation of 3 on top of the 5 starters that can give you a balanced offense and the ability to run. They can do all of that. Mm-hmm. I saw improvement with the defense last year. Not greatness, but improvement. You're shifting it. You're kind of changing the water, the oil. But based on what you got and who came in here, I'm buying the hype and the high praise with Diaco.
I agree. I'm not crazy. No. I think
the defense can be okay.
I think the juice and the energy that Diaco brings, and the fact that Perel's played in the 3-4 before, that knowledge will be. He can just have those other D linemen just absorb all that knowledge. I think that's great. I think the biggest thing is for me, why I agree with you is A, the offensive line, and B is the quarterback. I mean, you got Tanner Lee. Yeah, you got Patrick O'Brien. Patrick O'Brien's never played meaningful snaps. Yeah, Tanner has done it, but it's at Tulane. Has never played meaningful snaps here at a fishbowl of Nebraska. Don't know what that's going to be like. You hear former guys who played with Tanner. You've seen what he do. Yeah, it's practice. There's no results. It's like hitting golf balls in a driving range. There's no, you're never going to be penalized for making mistakes.
Kind of comes down to
right. And
the one yes you got versus the 48 no's.
Correct. So there's those O-line issues, QB issues, those that's tough. That's very tough to handle.
In real time.
Right.
More from Mike Riley. Great to have you on a Wednesday. Hail Varsity Radio continues, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Subscribe to Hail Varsity Magazine. Call 1-855-3-HUSKER or go to hailvarsity.com/subscribe.
That's amazing!
Now, back to the show with Chris Schmidt and Jay Moore.
We made these moves to try to be better, and we want to be better this year.
More from Mike Riley. That was early in the press conference. The topic of fan patience and the reality of transition at quarterback, at defensive scheme, and what Nebraska wants to do. Welcome back to Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine. You didn't make the move to buy time with transition being the reason. It's kind of go full steam ahead and embrace the transition and differences. More from Riley on the defense and what that can do for 2017, the reason for this shift.
When you change defenses, I didn't do that to start over in development. It's going to take some extra work. There is a transition in learning, but we're doing this in the picture to be better in 2017. That's what we want to do.
I mean, he said be better in 17. I don't know how many times the first 10 minutes of his talk today. And the urgency is extremely clear, and that's to be expected, but it's real. And let's transition that urgency and that want to reality. Bird, let's go back in the DeLorean. Was there a point in camp or preseason where you knew, okay, some of my dudes I came in with were, option style people. Billy sees, let's see how far and long we can throw it. Because he was great with it in Oakland, getting to a Super Bowl. Was there a point where you just kind of stepped back? Because you've been through transition, and you still ran a 4-3, so it wasn't quite like this, but you've done the transition thing from college to the NFL to a 3-4. Is there a point in time you just stand back and go, oh, crap?
Not really. I never did. I mean,
not even on just watching your offense?
Well, you don't know. Like, as defense,
you think it's going to be okay?
You don't based know. On what you're, you not, you're not in meetings. You go against them in practice. When you beat them up in practice, you feel like you're doing good things. When the offense beats you up in practice, you feel like you're playing bad as a defense. No, I mean, that first year, I mean, I kind of heard some stuff after the season once Joe was kind of gone from other guys that, with the long, wordy plays called in the huddle that Joe was calling things wrong that didn't even make sense, so guys weren't even on the same page a lot. I mean, but that's part of the growing pains you go through. We switched from an over-defense to an under-defensive front from my sophomore to junior year. Didn't ask any questions, Coach Callahan, Coach Cosgrove said, we're getting more physical. We got to do this. We need to do this. And that switched over to under fit our personality much better. And it was a great move. It was a phenomenal move for us. We played much better defense the next year. But you don't get so caught up. I don't know. Maybe it's just me, but you have so much other stuff going on. Literally from the moment you get up to the moment you go to bed, you're busy. Whether it's summer, off season, whatever it is, during the season, you just have school.
Genuinely optimistic as a player.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't ever like to focus on the negative stuff. Try to draw positives. Even after something, we always had a saying after practice, you have your two kind of your grocery bags. You put your crappy plays in one bag, your good plays in the other, and you throw away that crappy bag. You learn from it, but you remember what you did really, really well, and you build off of it. Mm-hmm. So we just, the way we talked and try to, you get better from the negative stuff, but you really got to focus on the stuff you do well. And I don't know, I just never been a very, it's easy to get caught up in the negative side of things sometimes, but that does you no good. That doesn't know anyone any good. You got to focus on getting better just constantly. Something to get better at every day. Doesn't matter if it's your first step, it's your pad level. It's the small, small details. You focus on those small details every day, you're going to continue to get better. It's just part of the process. It's what you hear over and over and over again. Some people are like, oh, I'm tired of hearing that. But that's what it is. It's simple. It's a simple, continued process. Don't make a mountain out of a molehill. Nothing's that really that big a deal. Just keep chipping away, chipping away, chipping away, chipping away, and sooner or later that big mountain that you were chipping at now is just down to nothing. And all of a sudden you're standing on top of this pile of rock that you just chipped away, and you're looking down at everyone like, damn, this is pretty nice. We've gotten better, we've improved, I've done this, as a team we've done this, whatever it is. So never got worried. I was so focused on what I need to do personally, what I need to do to help out the other 10 guys in the field. I think a lot of guys are like that. Surprisingly, after practice, guys don't talk about football that much.
No, because you eat, breathe, sleep,
right.
And you just
want to
go do your own thing.
After games, guys don't talk about the games that much. You come in the next day, you watch the film, but you don't talk about it. You might say some things, but you don't really talk about it that much. You learn from things and you move on. You don't get hung up on the stuff that doesn't make you any better.
Mike Riley, let's talk quarterbacks for a second here, and it'll be even for your number two and your number one, or your number one and your number two, interchangeable right now between POB and Tanner Lee.
And then the quarterbacking part, you're going to ask this question anyway, but we're going to try to get Tanner and Patrick even turns. It will probably, Danny and I were talking the other day about flipping a coin for the first snap.
Heads.
Tails never fails.
Dude, heads. I win, tails, you lose. That's what it is. You've got a couple of groups here, and Riley went on to
explain. Did you ever have one of those those trick coins where one side weighed more than the others?
Yeah, I took a lot of money in recess.
I figured you did.
Yeah.
Explains a lot.
Scumbag. You're going to have your two candidates to win the job, Tanner Lee, Patrick O'Brien, in one group. You're going to have your other quarterbacks, Jebbia, and the walk-on. That's not nice to call him just the walk-on, but
Andrew Bunch.
Bunch, thank you.
Brady Bunch.
Andrew, in another. And one thing that Riley talked about was how well they got guys ready. And I'm talking Lee and I'm talking O'Brien during the Sunday scrimmages. They got about 25 plays every Sunday, and it kind of kept building. So they feel pretty good about the development and the groupings and how that's worked out well. So Riley kind of touched on the importance of quarterback because, you have your bullet points. It's defense, transition, it's quarterback for sure. And those are the two things that are most microscope scrutinized, watched here for the next 6 weeks. But Riley's pretty real. He's real about, look, this change is to be better. This change isn't to kind of hit reset and give us a little breathing room or an excuse. That was very adamant about being better in 2017. The other part of this thing, too, is very evident with Nebraska and just their quarterback play and what really is now a pro style, non-dual threat guy that they have.
What happens naturally is you lose a quarterback to graduation. You got to be prepared. And if you're not, then it's on you. That's the way it always will be.
So he's rolling with that. Do you think there is some excitement? And excitement's probably the wrong word, but do you think there's some relief? Maybe relief's a better word with what they now have to choose from at quarterback. That's not a people's elbow between Tommy's eyes. God love him for all the games he won, how durable he was, some of the plays he made. Mm-hmm. So a thank you to him for Nebraska fans. That said, you can do a lot of what the hell you want. Mm-hmm. We'll spend time in the 5 o'clock hour on this run game identity and how pertinent it was to the discussion along with the Be Better in 2017 mantra. But they got to be just kind of like smiling.
Don't you think? Yes and no. I mean, Tommy had that again. I know his bad decision making, but he had still had some of that eraser ability for broken plays, which is really nice to have. My biggest thing is just getting the consistency of getting better and never really taking a step back. I felt like I always expect that out of kids, and you think, okay, Tommy's really going to make that step, and you think you'd see some games, especially early in the year, Tommy would always look very, very, would play well because teams don't really have a full grasp of maybe what they're doing offensively yet. You're tweaking some things, but kind of as the season went on, Tommy would always wouldn't progress. He'd almost take steps back, you know.
Or maybe he'd even hit a ceiling.
Maybe. I don't know. But I know there were some injuries there. But I don't know if it was what Tommy or what defenses were doing to him or just the way the season kind of plays out sometimes. That's probably a little bit of both mm-hmm. thrown into a blender. And, it's a bad offensive milkshake, you know. But I think the way he – I want that consistency, you know, is the guy that each week, you know, I'm not talking about, you know, great performances day one. I'm just saying, you just build on it. You see the improvements from game one to game two to game three to game four to game five. Instead of like all of a sudden you see that and all of a sudden, with Tommy, I feel like you just got to game six or whatever. Once you got into Big Ten play, it's like, wow, this wasn't the guy you just saw against Oregon or BYU or who it might be. He just looks different, you know. He's not trusting his O-line. He's panicked. He's hurried. He's uncomfortable. I just want to see a guy that's kind of unflappable back there and doesn't get flustered and just, you know, just kind of whatever. I'm gonna do what I do. I'm just gonna get better, try to improve, and not, I don't know, just don't panic. I just feel like Tommy would always kind of panic, and that's kind of was force him to take steps back, you know, and I think they can be excited about that, hopefully, and just getting that better consistency from your guy that's touching football every play.
Man, and that's the difference maker. And Riley spent a lot of time talking about really the shortfall on offense last year and where they got to get better, and that's identity, run game, that's emphasis, that's helping the O-line. A lot more to come from Coach Riley. And his press conference, a lot of excitement. I mean, he hit some really important football topics, and the priorities have been laid out, and we'll spend some more time on it. Wilderness Ridge Golf segment is coming up, and also our conversation with Jerry DiNardo, Big Ten Network. I want to remind you about drunk driving. Never a good idea to do so. If a friend or some family decide to offer you a ride, you say no, and you think you're okay to drive. You mix alcohol and driving. It's a bad call. It can take a life, can lose yours, can be arrested, go to jail, pay fines, legal fees. Any way you think about it, you drink, you drive, you lose. A message from the Nebraska Department of Roads in the safety office.
Want to be heard?
We know he's not. Let him finish.
Call 402-466-ESPN or text HALE to 88474 with your message. Chat with us on Twitter at Schmidt_radio at JMore44 and TJ_Henning.
Who wants to have some fun?
Now it's back to the show with Chris Schmidt and Jay Moore.
Back with you, we have Jerry DiNardo coming up here in about 40 minutes. It is that time. It is the Wilderness Ridge Golf segment. Wilderness Ridge Golf, membership benefits, membership pricing. I am making a promise to myself to go play 9 at Wilderness Ridge Sundays when Junior doesn't have baseball with some pals.
Good man.
I'm going to do it. Mike Shuhart with us, Director of Instruction, Nebraska Golf. Jay Moore is already dreaming about a tee time. And Shuey, my man, how's Arizona? Good work.
It was nice. Huh?
It was nice.
How about that?
Congrats to the W there.
Yes.
Thanks. That was fun to watch, man. I walked basically the last two rounds with her, and it was fun to watch, man. She played.
She was in the red for, was it 3 or 4 rounds?
3 rounds. We played 36 holes
okay.
the first day.
Yeah.
So she shot the even par the first round, and then I basically walked all 18 with her that second round. Mm-hmm. She finished birdie, shoot 69, and then
it's awesome.
And then she just played solid, man. She shot 68 the last round, and really never was.
Now is this a girl you've always kind of referenced to that kind of has that it, kind of it factor that kind of goes out there and just goes about her business and doesn't get too.
No, that's actually
that different.
That's
girl.
A different girl. Oh, well. She's the girl from Minnesota.
Okay, that's okay.
Yeah, so. No, Audrey's played great all year. She's from Kansas City. You know, she's just had a really good season mm-hmm. so far, and it was nice to see her put all of her hard work kind of came together.
Do you like in college golf? I mean, people don't realize in college golf now, because you can watch it now on Golf Channel with the national championship and everything, but a college golf coach can have – they can pretty much damn do anything on the course. You can give them the yardages. You can
– yeah.
You can pretty much do anything except for carry their bag almost for all 18 holes. You know,
I mean, it's good and bad. It's good. For the most part, it's really good. I mean, the only bad part is you can get a little too involved, slow things down and do things like that. But not really. I mean, it's really good because it allows you to interact and actually, in my opinion, help the players more in what they need more help with.
Mm-hmm.
Which is understanding how to play the game
right.
and see what they're trying to see mm-hmm. and look at things maybe a little bit mm-hmm. different or see things that they wouldn't normally see mm-hmm. and how to do certain things. Mm-hmm. You know, we have a tendency to get so wrapped up in that I'm not hitting it good and there's something wrong with my swing and blah, 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 blah. And it's like, in a lot of cases, it's not really that. I mean, some of the mistakes come more from a management. I call it management, which is really what I'm trying to do. Mm-hmm. And it's really not what's necessary at that point in time. We actually need to do this. You know, this is a really good example. The course that we played, because the course was in great, great shape.
What
like it always
it?
Is. It's Westbrook Village. So it's up in Peoria.
Okay.
So,
which is like northwest?
North and west.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So the greens are super hard. I mean, super hard, like trying to land a ball on a
tabletop
cart path.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
mm-hmm.
they were hard. So you hit a wedge shot in there, man, and if it hit next to the hole, it was going 30 to 40 feet every time, no matter how good you hit it.
Wow.
I mean, so it's like you got to start to adjust mm-hmm. to that. And it's mm-hmm. like now your yardages have to become different mm-hmm. because you got to hit it to the front part of the green to mm-hmm. play for a 20 and 30, basically, yard of bounce and roll.
Front
of what
pins
it
are
is.
Essentially – impossible to get close to.
No, you're trying to then bounce mm-hmm. them on there.
Yeah.
And that's a nice thing about the golf course. It was available
uh-huh.
for a player to do that.
No force carries or...
But it's a little different than what they're used to, man. You got a wedge shot. You got an 80-yard shot in your hand. You're not used to having to mm-hmm. bounce it short and bounce it up. Mm-hmm. You're used to hitting it right at it.
Right, because we hear softer conditions with moisture.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And chipping, same way. I mean, your chipping reacts totally different. So you got to adjust pretty quickly on the fly, you know, to adjust to those conditions. And it's easy to get frustrated because you can hit a lot of really good shots that don't turn out very good, you know. So then it's like you get frustrated because, man, I thought I hit that pretty good. Did I really hit that good? It's like, so it's that's the to me the fun part about it and the learning part and the teaching part of it is you get to talk through things and like we need to actually do this and land it right here. Why would I do that? Well, because it's going to react a certain way and that's how you actually get the ball, have the opportunity to get the ball close to the hole, you know. And you keep them in the moment, you know, teaching them how to really play the game. And play the game is, again, it's you hear it all the time, but it's like you got to play one shot at a time. Mm-hmm. So it's like, can I stay in the moment and can I stay committed to my process of what I practice all the time? And when I practice, I start to hit good shots and I do this. Can I stay committed to that for the entire round in every shot, even though things are happening that are telling me things aren't going really good, can I stay committed to doing what I need to do, you know, stay with my routine, stay with my rhythm, stay with the things that I do and stay committed to my shot no matter what happens, because it works, you know. But it's easy to lose sight of that. All of a sudden, you know, you hit a couple of squirrely shots, you hit a couple of bogeys here or there, and it's like it's easy to get out of staying in the moment of what you need to do and letting it come back to you, you know. So
how do you coach up getting back on the horse after you're on a roll and then you get off the tracks a bit and you do have a bogey and then it's time to recover? How do you I mean, they got to do it, but you got to encourage them.
So I just tell them, I ask them two questions. So where are you going to go and how are you going to get there?
Really?
Where are you going to go and how are you going to get there? So what does that mean? It's like, where does my ball need to go and how is it going to travel to get there? So it's like, and what that does is that starts the process. You have to start processing on, well, where's it going to go? Well, you have to go through the whole thing. It's like, I have X amount of yardage to go because I want my ball to go that far. All right. So, well, how is it going to curve to get there? Is it going to go high, low, left to right,
warm
high,
burner,
all this stuff? So you start to, yeah. Hopefully we're not seeing little rollers up there. But
I got on the green, Chewy.
Yeah. So what that does is that occupies their mind because they have to process something. They have to do something. So no matter what happens, if they have to go through a process, it has to occupy their mind on doing something. So it starts to let them focus on what it is they're trying to accomplish, which starts to then take their focus away of the things that have happened up to that point. So that's how you get back into doing what it is you need to do, because you got to go through some type of a process to determine, what club am I going to hit? Why do I pull that club out of my bag? Why am I hitting a 7-iron here? Because, well, I have X amount of yardage to go. It's like taking the conditions into play. What's it doing? Is it into the wind? Is it left to right? Is it downwind? You know, it's like I'm hitting this. I pulled this club out of my bag for a particular reason because my 7-iron goes that far. And it's going to be landing somewhere up there where we want to go. So it's about getting more specific in what it is that you want to do, as opposed to just grab a 7-iron and hit it at the flag. So it's like, no, we need to process more of what it is that we actually are trying to do. Well, the more you have to process, the less you can think about the other stuff, because you can't do both. Mm-hmm. I can't be upset about what's happening, how bad I'm hitting it, and also trying to process this of what it is I want to have happen. So it helps narrow their focus on what it is they need to try to accomplish.
Love that. More with Mike Shewhart, Wilderness Ridge Golf segment. Mike Shewhart. And you can find Wilderness Ridge online, wildernessridgegolf.com, or visit them today, 402-434-5106. More with Shuey next.
Welcome back to the Hail Varsity Radio Show. Here's Chris and Jay.
More with Mike Shewhart, Shuey, Wilderness Ridge Golf segment. Is there a T-Rex in the building?
we have a little T-Rex that we have on our team that I carry around in my bag with me when we play. So, and my T-Rex has a name.
Timmy?
Not Timmy.
Timmy.
His name's Rembrandt.
What?
Yeah, Rembrandt.
Man. Yeah.
Okay.
Paint
so
a picture.
What is Rembrandt?
Ah.
So I couldn't use Picasso because it's already been used, so I had to name him something else, so I named him Rembrandt.
You're bringing back art history 101,
right,
my man.
And so it's like, what does Rembrandt mean? So it's like every shot that I'm getting ready to perform, I'm trying to paint a picture of what I want. And every time I do that, man, I get to say Rembrandt. Because I actually had a friend of mine that played golf that way. I hadn't seen him for a while. He was playing overseas in Asia, and he came back, and we were playing in a tournament together. And he hits his second shot on the first hole, and he goes, Picasso! And I'm like, what? So like three more times he did that. So finally I couldn't take it. And I said, what the heck are you doing? He says, Picasso. I'm like, okay, what does that mean? He says, man, I painted my picture perfect. No. So he's just seeing what shots he wants to hit. And every time he hits one, he gets to say Picasso because he painted his picture of what he wanted to have happen.
That's such a good take.
So the key to that is don't paint those pictures of the ball rolling along the ground.
Don't name it something you can't say on radio.
Exactly right.
Oh, that's good. Hey, we're kind of getting closer to these finalized rules of golf here, 2019.
Wow.
How about that, huh?
How about that?
And maybe more coming.
I know what.
34 proposed changes, but sounds like putting with a flagstick in, no more of a penalty, being able to ground your club in a marked hazard, so not a bunker, but yet a water hazard in a...
No more hazards, anymore.
What's that?
No more hazards.
That's what is. Well, is that?
It's called a penalty area.
Oh.
So they're eliminating hazards.
So like, there's no more red and yellow.
There is red and yellow, but they're not called water hazards.
They're just called.
They're called penalty areas. So now you have the option to mark a golf course where you can mark like a waste area,
mm-hmm.
like desert golf.
Right.
You can mark a whole desert area as a red
mm-hmm.
penalty area, which was red in the old rules, that was a water hazard.
Right.
So it doesn't have to have water in it to be considered a water hazard because it's not a hazard, not water hazard anymore. They're penalty areas.
Interesting.
I thought that was very interesting. So, you know, I liked a lot of them. I read through a bunch of them today. You know, and they're really good because they're simplifying things,
100%.
Which needs to be simplified immensely. And they're helping speed the game up.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a lot of those rules are to help speed the game up. Now, there are some that we'll see. I mean, they're not 100% set in stone that they're going to happen. They're still going to be proposed, I think. So it'll be amazing to see if all of those actually are proposed because there's a couple that are a little scary. You know, it's like you can pick your – you do not have to announce – that you are looking at your golf ball for a variety of reasons. In the past, you had to announce mm-hmm. that I want to look at my golf ball to see if it was damaged mm-hmm. or if it was embedded.
Mm-hmm.
You just can look at it.
Right.
You can pick it up and look at it. It's like that makes me a little scary.
Yeah.
Guys will be putting their hands all over that golf ball mm-hmm. all the time.
Yeah.
So, but there's some interesting ones. The one, real quick, is that the drop. So it's a new dropping.
Okay.
So I want to see where guys are going to start to drop from.
Yeah.
Because you used to have to drop basically from shoulder high.
Sure.
Now all there has to be is air between the ground and the ball. So are guys going to get right down there by their shoelaces
right.
and start to drop?
This will be good.
It will
help me. Mike Shuhart, Shuey, hang out if you want, brother. Appreciate it. Shuey with Wilderness Ridge Golf. Jerry DiNardo coming up on Hail Varsity.
Hail Varsity Magazine presents the Hail Varsity Radio Show, the authority on all things Huskers. Spanning across the state, no one else talks Huskers like Hail Varsity.
Day by day,
day by day,
we get better and better.
We get better and better.
We get big, big.
We get big, big.
Boom, big, big.
Boom, big, big.
Hail Varsity Radio Show, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Here are your hosts, Chris Schmidt and former Blackshirt Jay Moore.
Back with you, Hour 2, Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, Blackshirt Husker, NFLer Jay Moore. A lot of talk about Nebraska football. Coach Riley met the media today. We spent a lot of time in Hour 1 on defense and transition. We'll spend some more time on the offense. Jerry DiNardo, Big Ten Network, 15 minutes away. And great to have you in. Mike Shuhart, Wilderness Ridge Golf, Nebraska Golf, hanging out in studio. I love when he does that. And great golf segment we just had with him. So if you missed any part of Hour 1, and you're going to be around for Hour 2. Awesome. If you need to catch us on your time, don't forget the podcast on HailVarsity.com or iTunes or the ESPN 1480 app that is free for you to download with your smartphone and catch us that way. Your chance coming up. I'm going to say we table the Willie Nelson contest towards the end of the show. I'm going to give you a hint there. More left-handed trivia. Yesterday's answer was Phil Mickelson. Monday's answer was Boomer Esiason. I will not divulge any more info till about 50 after if you want Willie Nelson for June 7th in Lincoln. You can join us 466-3776, 466-3776, 1-800-825-5865. A lot of times you ask yourself this in philosophy class, if you go, who are we? Well, Nebraska on offense got 13. We'll try and define that. You kind of have an idea with personnel and identity, but it was talked about and touched on today, Mike Riley.
We got to do a better job, and I talked to the coaches about this this year, establishing an identity running game that is a when we turn on the film and it looks like this, then my daughter can say, "Whoa, that's Nebraska right there." That's how it's got to look. We do that enough that we have a signature, and that you know, when I say that, you got to have balance to that too, because I always talk to you guys about the fact that whatever you do well, you better have a curveball to it. But before you get to the curveball, you have to establish who are we, and then repeated runs that we run and are productive.
Identity, signature, repeated runs. Who are we on offense? Man, I love hearing that, Bird.
But the crazy thing is we still don't know.
No, I know. And that's where I'm kind of going with this. It's year three right now.
Because obviously the status quo has changed with your quarterback.
Yes.
I mean, you switched things because of what his strengths were. But now we're just like, what is it going? Everyone still doesn't know what it looks like, because is this what they originally wanted to do as planned, or have they learned and tweaked it to what they see in the Big Ten? What is the identity? We don't know. That's the greatest thing.
Well, here's what my identity vision is, and Riley kind of lays it out there, but I've watched enough reruns or even live action, and when Pete Carroll looked like someone stole his teddy bear, it was Mike Riley. When we talk signature, I think of USC getting whacked by Oregon State the few times it happened, okay? And what happened in those games? Run game was going, draw game was going, bubble screen was going. It was a mess for the best team in college football to roll into Corvallis. They had no answer on that Thursday night, on that Saturday. And what was going on with it was guys were in space, and you didn't know what the offense was going to do, and you had no answer for it when they did do it. So let's talk about that signature. Bird, what are you drafting here? What's your bread and butter run play going to be? Your bread and butter run play last year was your quarterback draw.
Right.
Okay? It was.
Mm-hmm.
That ain't going to happen that often. You might throw a curveball, as Riley likes to talk about, inside the red zone when you're not thinking.
That's a huge curveball.
When you're not thinking quarterback run. But what is it going to be? Is it going to be stretch outside, cut back? Is it going to be that draw play? Is it going to be just a handoff? You tell me. I mean,
if you're sticking to West Coast principles, the stretch play is a huge play.
I love
it. In the West Coast offense.
You can boot off of it, right?
Exactly. That's why I like it. That's a very, very big one. Power is also a power and counter type of plays, but you can, power's one. The old wham play, that's always, they kind of leave the...
Is it named after the group?
No, it is not. That's kind of where the center leaves the one technique or the shade unblocked, and you kind of have a tight end that is in slot and kicks him out. The nose guard gets all excited, gets upfield. The next thing, he's got a tight end right in his ear hole.
Right.
So that was Coach Callen. I like to run that quite a bit in the West Coast. I mean, there's all sorts of things. I mean, West Coast, you can vary it. But I think the stretch play, the counter play, the toss play, those are all power play. I mean, those are your staple runs. But really, that stretch play is always, you think – Terrell Davis Broncos, Peyton Manning Colts.
One cut, boom.
Exactly. That stretch play. Then you get I get to see Peyton Manning, or you just see him extend that arm out and then pull it away. And then, boom, he's looking for Dallas Clark or whoever it
or
was.
Edge.
Mm-hmm.
Edge on a wheel.
Right.
So there's take the handoff.
Right, exactly. So that's, I think stretch play is huge. And you can just do so many different things off of it. And, I mean, you can even do halfback, passes off of it, if you really wanted to. I like that one a lot. So I could see that one becoming the go-to bread and butter type of run.
But I mean, Nebraska has gotta find it. There's bread. There's condiments to choose from.
Mm-hmm. What kind of butter? Are you using all natural? Are you going margarine, or what do you
Or the spray kind?
Right. Ooh. I can't believe it's not butter,
Right, I mean, the Fabio look. I don't know what type of butter. But you got to help the offense cut 14, and it starts with that offensive line.
We don't have Tommy's legs. So what we have to do is be very aware of allowing the quarterback to succeed. And so what we have in the passing game that helped, well, first of all, the line has to do a nice job. Okay, start with that. Anybody in protection, whether it's the line or the tight end or the back, they have to do a good job. Now, with that, we have to have things that help the line, okay, that will then help the quarterback. You know, if you have a quarterback that's not going to be a primary runner like Tommy was, then you better have a draw game, a screen game. You know, you better have a quick game. You better have some stuff that helps the line.
That's very fair. And Amir Abdullah was here 2 years ago and helped the offensive line. Last year, you had a quarterback that helped the offensive line. This year, you still may have a quarterback that helps the offensive line. We'll have a conversation with Divine Ozigbo tomorrow. Just a little teaser on that because we talked to him today. You'll hear it tomorrow. He understands what the back's got to do to help that offensive line. Bird, what's your take on this O-line? I mean, I know center's up in the air. The right tackle's a question mark. Farmer's very athletic and talented. The left side's really good with Foster and Gates. There are so many options, and I hate to beat this horse by talking offensive line, but Riley's right there, man. Talking got to help the quarterback. He said screen game, short game, quick game, draw. I mean, all of that I think can work, and I go back to that vision in my mind about what Oregon State once upon a time did to USC. It was all part of it with the Steven Jacksons, with the quizzes, I mean, with the Mannions, right? Mm-hmm. So what do you think is best suited to help this O-line? As you look at the offensive line right now, what is it? Is it just straight, listen, these guys are best suited to fire off the ball, go right at defenses, power? Are they better athletically? So get them in some movement, get some pull game going. I mean, they want a screen game. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a glorified mm-hmm. run game if you're not all in on a run handoff type
sure.
situation. So what's the best medicine here to help this O-line?
They got to get back to the physicality-ness. Just
kick somebody's butt in front of you.
I mean, I'm talking if there's one period of practice that I'm focusing on this spring, I'm extending my 9 and 7 periods.
Okay.
Another 2 periods.
Okay.
I am getting after it. I mean, if you want to talk about identity, but this O-line, we have never, I mean, with I know the mix and match type of bunch, the injuries, you just never seen them be physical. You just haven't seen it. Now, I don't know, is it a talent thing? Is it what they're being practiced or they're being coached thing? But you just haven't seen guys just really get down. You get the double team set. You get him knocked back a couple yards. You see the nice climb to the linebacker, get him knocked back, sealed up. You haven't seen at times. I look back to maybe the Michigan State game last year.
Mm-hmm. They were nasty, baby.
Great physical. The nastiness, being physical, getting after it. You saw a glimpse of it, but again, the whole consistency thing. I'm tired of doing it one game and not doing it the next.
Okay.
We can whether it's football, whether it's the basketball team, where we talked about it. You got to be. I need some better consistency.
Be
from,
good or
from
suck,
everyone.
But
right.
Decide.
Well, I mean, listen, I'm okay. Listen, I'm always going to be okay. Some teams are going to be better. Mm-hmm. You're going to get beat sometimes. It's just going to happen. But let's not do it just because of we just didn't play. You know, you're just. I don't. Some teams are going to come out and they're going to complete. They have a crazy game. They have, you know, a quarterback. They catch everything. They get every break, and you lose. You can live with it. You play in basketball. You play a team. They make every three. They just make everything. You know what? You have an off night. It happens. But to where you have the inconsistencies, the carelessness, the not being physical, to not, you know, just those things that you see sometimes. You're like, what in the hell? Why? You know, have to make fourth quarter comebacks against Purdue and Illinois. Not buying that, you know, that shouldn't happen.
Let's talk mentality. Is it a mentality down there to be the toughest guy in the bar? Is that part of the issue?
I don't, without a doubt. I think, again, they talk about it, but when it really comes down to it, I don't know if they're.
I thought they. Listen, I thought they got out physicaled by Illinois and Indiana.
Yeah, I mean, that D-line of Illinois is pretty damn good.
Sure.
But, again, they got worked. Mm-hmm. They got worked. There's a lot of games where our line got worked.
They got worked.
We're told 100%. It's just, you don't – the consistency. Just being physical, just getting after it, and just being – dude, you got to play pissed off. You got to be dirty a little bit. You got to love to – you know, get nasty a little bit. You always got to be tiptoeing that line of
psycho
and almost getting a penalty every play. You got to go that fine line of just doing that. You have to. We just haven't seen it. You see guys, and you know what? Yeah, they might do it sometimes, but too many times they're not. Guys are getting, they're just getting owned, and that's just that has to improve. And you can't improve anything else offensively until those five guys up front. And honestly, you get that going, and you got to. It's not just those five guys. It's another five guys behind those guys that have that same mentality and be about that business because you have to develop the depth. And that's what we've seen. And that's been our biggest Achilles heel is our depth. You know, Foster goes down, we're scrambling. Mm-hmm. You know, Farmer goes down, we're scrambling. Who's stepping up? Okay, yeah, there's guys here, but it just doesn't work. We got to develop that depth. It has to be. You have to have 10 solid dudes, and I can't comfortably stand up here and say we don't. We don't have 10 guys.
We have
10 names.
You don't have a third tackle.
Wait, we have maybe.
You don't have a second tackle.
We have guys who should be, who we think should be, but they're not. We don't have 10. I think I'm confident saying we have.
You have three.
Yeah,
they have three.
They have three guys.
You have Foster. You have Gates. You have
right.
Farmer.
Right.
You have three on that offensive line.
You need 10.
You do need
realistically
10.
to get to where they need to go offensively. You need 10 dudes. You need 10 bodies that are about nasty business. You know, not afraid to do the necessary things that people don't want to do.
That's going to make the D respond in kind, and it's just going to make each other better. I mean, that's what
you got to push.
That's the mentality.
You
got to
be constantly pushing the envelope. You know, I mean, you're pushing in practice the opposing D line to their limits where fights are breaking out. I know you don't. People, it would be nice. No, fights are good sometimes because that means guys are getting pissed off and they don't like it. And so that you always got to be pushing that envelope, pushing the envelope to where, like I said, you're almost the referee's like, hey, watch it. It's enough.
No more eye gouging.
You're right. Exactly. So you got to have that mentality.
More from Mike Riley. The offense, what it would look like when it's at its best.
When we're going to be at our best, we're going to be a good screen team. We're going to be a good draw team. We're going to be a good quick team. And then we'll call in the protection, and we run the ball with some signature runs, and we play action pass, and we can take our shots. That's what we'll want it to look like.
Devil's advocate question. We just laid out his blueprint. This is his masterpiece of architecture, and it's won him a lot of games. Does that sound physical?
Not necessarily. Draw plays aren't physical. Draw plays invite.
Quick game, physical?
No. Getting the ball out of your hands, protecting your O-line from getting sacks. You know, bubble screen, same deal. Draws is it's a pass pro look. You invite the D lineman upfield, club him upfield, and it's a handoff, and it's hopefully they bid on the look, the protection look, and off to the races. Again, it's just he's mentioned a couple different things here: the identity runs and being physical. But yet, so I don't know. I'm torn right now. It's hard to put my finger on what they're really going to do or what they want to do.
But you got a quarterback that can sling it around. Who will it be? We'll talk with transition. We'll talk about it with Jerry DiNardo next.
Former Blackshirt Jay Moore.
That thing is big, Jay. That thing looks hurt, Jay. Oh, man, who backed up Jay? Jay, we could get some big money for that.
Now, back to the show with Chris Schmidt and Jay Moore.
A lot of thoughts from Coach Riley today, and he wants that offensive identity. He wants that bread and butter run. And also, he's excited about the quarterback situation. Longtime coach in college football, LSU, Indiana, Vanderbilt, and assistant at Colorado. Coach Jerry DiNardo with us. Big Ten Network at Jerry DiNardo on Twitter. Coach, are you ready to get back at it? Spring ball starts on Saturday. How are you?
I'm doing great, thank you. Not sure how many practices I'm going to make. You know, our schedule's been cut back a little bit with the network, so I only made about four of them last year. Didn't make Nebraska, but so my plans are a little unsettled. But I'm certainly ready for everyone else to be ready.
No, that's good. So little downtime for you. How do you unwind from football season?
I used to have to unwind. I feel a little guilty saying this. It's not the grind what I do as it used to be. So
okay.
I would do it all year round if I could. so I'm not sure I'm worthy of unwinding.
Good work. I like it. Coach, well, Nebraska trying to kind of get wound up and have a big year three for Coach Riley. Coach had his press conference today. He hit on a lot of topics and priorities, and question was asked about, you know, the reason for the transition here on defense. Is it about kind of buying some time? Should fans be patient with it? And Riley, kind of paraphrasing point blank, said, no, we're doing all of this to get better in 2017. And let's talk about transition from your perspective as a coach here. What is something you set for yourself realistically to try, those bars you try and reach, those checkpoints you try and hit as a coach when spring is done, if you are transitioning to a 3-4?
Well, you know, you always want to come out of spring practice with a 2-deep that you say we can compete without any help from the newcomers with this 2-deep. And then, you know, inevitably you get some help. But I think conventional wisdom for most of us was, let's come out of spring ball with our 2-deep. Now, there's more mid-year transfers now than there's ever mm-hmm. been, so that even adds to the fact that you should be able to come out with a 2-deep at the end of spring without counting on a newcomer, and then if a newcomer comes along, that's an advantage. In this particular case, changing defenses, you know, it's a little bit more of a challenge because your 85 scholarships have historically been broken down into defensive line, linebackers, secondary. Now it's inside backers, outside backers, three down linemen. So, you know, just to simplify, you know, you wanted to be three deep with a four down lineman system with down linemen. So that's 12 defensive linemen on scholarship. So there's an adjustment there that takes place in the office as well as on the field. So it's a little bit more challenging going to a new scheme, but and I did read a couple of Mike's comments. Mike said, I didn't do this to buy time. I did this to get better. I think that's a great answer and a great attitude.
Coach, looking, I mean, the defensive unit as a whole, I feel with this change, I loved it. I like the personnel Nebraska has. I think it fits 3-4 very, very well. But looking, I feel better about where the defense is going than I kind of do with the offense right now, because we just don't know. What's the identity? You don't have Tommy anymore. You have new quarterbacks. What's the offensive line issue? But with a guy that's come from a pass-first offense with Langsdorf's, and he's talking about being physical, bringing that physicality back to Nebraska. Can a pass-first offense, in your mind, be a physical football team?
Well, I think, Jay, it depends on your ratio on first and 10. I don't know that Mike Riley wants to be pass-first. I think the jobs he's had, unless he was going to be an option guy, which he hasn't been, then a way to neutralize a disadvantage in talent, which you have at Oregon State, is to throw the ball. So I don't know that that's exactly what he wants to be. I think you can be physical if you have a 9-on-7 drill during practice on Tuesday and Wednesdays and you get after it. And then on first and 10, if the numbers are such, you ought to be able to have a go-to run. And I heard Chris say that Mike said that today. So, yes, I think you can. You know, the beauty of the offense they want to run is on neutral downs and first and 10, if they're anticipating 9 in the box, either pre-snap or post-snap, we're going to throw the ball. If we're going to throw the ball well enough that the next first and 10 is going to be 7 in the box, then we're going to run the ball. But you have to have a go-to run to do that. And I think, you know, that's probably going to be the inside zone, outside zone, or lead out of the eye. So I think you can be physical. I think it's more about practice than it is about your playbook. Ohio State, to keep going, Ohio State's a spread team. I've been to their practices. you better buckle it up.
Jerry DiNardo with us, Hail Varsity Radio. That's good to know, Coach, with the mentality. And let's talk offensive line, a spot you know well. And Jay and I were just kind of going through some names, and spring will start Saturday, where we feel like there's three guys Nebraska has on the offensive line that are proven, that are pretty physical, that are really solid. It's littered with talent on paper, talent with stars next to their name. But Nebraska is, well, they need to, quite frankly, find the rest of the right side and the center and then get some depth behind it. With your work on the offensive line, how can you develop young talent on that O-line while also feeling good about your starters? Because you have some experience there at right tackle. You're going to have a new guy at center. And then, God forbid, you get hurt again like you did last year. You're going to need a second tackle, and you're going to need a guy that can play center and also a guard. You're going to need five more behind the starting five.
You know, Chris, I don't think there's any magic to it. I think it's, you know, repping drills at practice and you know, whether they're individual drills, group drills, team drills, it's just repetition. But you know, I maybe I'm wrong, but the image I have of Nebraska football, if I don't have offensive linemen good enough to block everybody in the West Division and most people in the East Division, except for the ones playing for the national championship, if I don't have offensive linemen good enough to learn that in spring practice and in preseason, well, then shame on me. That's my fault. Why shouldn't Nebraska have 15 really good offensive linemen on scholarship? And then don't worry, you know, then you just teach them and you rep them. And, you know, this is about personnel. This isn't about, you know, magic dust. And so they should have 15 offensive linemen that eventually are going to be good enough to block anybody in the West and most of the East. And eventually everybody in the entire conference. That's what Nebraska's put. I mean, I don't ever remember Nebraska saying we didn't have a good enough offensive linemen. I remember Nebraska saying we got the best in the country and we're going to knock the heck out of you.
good at it. Jerry DiNardo with the Hail Varsity Radio. Coach, how do you handle this quarterback battle? You have a transfer student that has got a lot of experience at Tulane that he's bringing with him, or some experience from Tulane. And then you got a cool customer from California that was your first prized quarterback recruit. And you spent time a year in the system. And it seems pretty even. They're going to get even reps. But how do you go about this as a head coach?
Well, you know, you're asking the wrong guy. I'm not even close to being qualified like Mike Riley is. I had a three-way battle at LSU. All three wound up playing in the NFL. And I couldn't figure it out. I picked one guy the first week because I thought he was the right guy. It didn't work out. I rotated him, and I eventually wound up getting fired and talking to you guys on the radio. So I know this, and I think Jay will back me up. The players don't care about any of what you just said, Chris. Yeah. The other players want Mike Riley to pick the best quarterback. They can be from the moon. They can be a freshman. They can be a five-time transfer, a one-time transfer. They can be from California. They can be from the Bronx. The players want the coaches to pick the best players to play, especially at quarterback. And nothing else matters, and that's who they'll support. They'll be both quarterbacks' friends. There ain't no doubt about that. You know, friends is one thing. Mm-hmm. But I want the best guy at every position to play if I'm on a roster like Nebraska. So Michael figured it out. He's got a lot more experience at that position than I had. I wish I had his experience when I was going through a quarterback transition.
Coach, about 2 minutes. That's what I wanted to ask you, is what was so difficult about it with your experience?
Okay, a lot of things. But let me give you one thing to think about. Do you let your quarterback go live? In other words, Jay, do we cut the defense loose on a quarterback, okay? If you a new quarterback, not a veteran quarterback. I'm talking about in competition. Mm-hmm. Do you cut the defense loose so that a quarterback can get sacked and beat up during spring practice? If you do, then that's less you find out in the first game that he starts. If you don't, you never know where his eyes are going to be as he's dropping back in the first game. During spring practice, if he can't get sacked, his eyes are going to be downfield. He's going to be reading the strong safety, reading the free safety. He's going to be panning the field with all these fancy reads on chalkboard, right? But then in the first game, if we don't know that he'll keep his eyes down, he might be looking at the rush. So that's what I found, Chris. When I was in this position, I called as many friends or as many people. I sought counsel, and I said, what do I do? And half the coaches I called said, cut him loose. The other half said, don't cut him loose. Mm-hmm. So I was back to square one. I did protect him. I didn't cut the defense loose. And sure enough, my guy was looking at the rush more than he was looking at the coverage on the first game he started. Mark D'Antonio, about 4 or 5 years ago, he cut his defense loose. I forget where the competition was between. So to me, a lot of things, but that's the thing that sticks in my mind that I screwed up.
Jared Donato with the Hale Varsity Radio. I think it was Connor Cook that won that battle, and it worked out all right for Michigan State. And we'll see how it works out for Nebraska. Coach, we'll get caught up with you again. Enjoy some downtime, and thanks for talking some spring ball with us. We always love catching up with you.
Thanks, Chris. Thanks, Jay.
Thanks, Coach.
Coach Jared Donato with the Hale Varsity Radio. Coach is unwinding a bit. God love him. But it was some good football.
No, he brought up a very good point going live. we went live in spring mm-hmm. with our guys. Now that transition from 04 to 05, you know, I distinctly remember one scrimmage on a Saturday during spring ball where we probably went, we did 150 play scrimmage. Now that's a
150.
That's a marathon. Okay, well, because the defense, we kicked the offense's ass that day. He was not happy, and he kept saying, "Give me the one, give me the ones." We'd come off, and Cods is like, "You guys are done for sure after this," and he would keep going back out. We'd keep going back out. He was not happy, but we got after the quarterback. I mean, Zach Taylor had to get stitches in his chin.
Wow!
After practice, because we roughed him up. But you have to do – you know what? You have to get uncomfortable a little bit. Mike Riley's got to get out of his comfort zone a little bit. He's got to do it to get this team to where it needs to go.
I have a jock doc coming up speaking about injuries. And your chance at Willie Nelson tickets. Hale Varsity continues.
Forget to catch any segment of the show?
Man, you are one pathetic loser.
Find the podcast of the show on HaleVarsity.com or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes.
All right, all right, all right.
Now, back to the show with Chris Schmidt and Jay Moore.
Back with you, Hale Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Time for a Jock Doc Wednesday in Lincoln Orthopedic Center. Dr. Brandon Seifert. Dr. Brandon, baseball is almost here in the majors. It's already going for the college level. How are you doing?
Hey, I'm doing great. Getting excited about baseball season for sure.
I am, and a diehard Ranger fan is my brother Mark. He is the biggest Ranger fan. He's always been a Ranger fan, and it started with Nolan Ryan whiffing people. One of his guys he liked watching growing up, and he's back with the Rangers, is Josh Hamilton. His story is well documented of failure and then kind of rising from the ashes and then bumps in the road. Well, one thing that's been constant is injury with Hamilton, Dr. Brandon, and it sounds like more rehab and another procedure for Josh Hamilton.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like. You know, it's pretty even just the number of knee surgeries that guy's had, especially on the left side. And I think most recently he had a ACL procedure done. It sounds like they may this work at that time, and then now it sounds like he's been lined up again for another knee surgery. They're not saying a whole lot whether or not meniscus repair versus cleanup, but that's kind of what it's looking like. Maybe another 6 to 8 weeks out, at least, if not even 3 months, is kind of what they're saying, at least preliminarily.
What do you do as a surgeon, as a healer, when you have a guy like Hamilton that's had a fourth surgery on this left knee in less than 2 years, and 11 total knee surgeries in his baseball career?
Yeah, it makes it really challenging. And so as you get into a situation like that, multiple injuries have occurred, obviously, that have led to those surgeries. You know, having that much trauma to your knee, the first thing you start to really worry about is, kind of the long-term consequences of this, which would be arthritis. And so, if you were to look at Josh's knee, I'm sure he has a significant amount of arthritis in his knee, which would be kind of the wear in the cartilage, which is a smooth surface on the ends of the bones, you start to lose some of that, or thinning of the cartilage kind of starts you into that arthritic process. So that's kind of the first thing that, you know, comes to mind. Obviously, as you start to get arthritis, you know, there's pain associated with it, there's swelling, and then as a high-level athlete, there's also some stiffness that goes along with it, which clearly as a high-level athlete is a big problem. But the other thing you worry about, too, is you kind of continue to deal with some of these meniscal issues. You kind of get started on that meniscus pathway as a high-level athlete, you have your first tear, maybe you get it cleaned out, maybe you get it repaired, and you kind of just continue on that pathway, continuing to have some meniscal issues. In fact, there was a study that was put out not long ago that talked about, you know, patients who have, you know, a meniscus tear along with an ACL tear. Within 5 years, almost 50 or 60% of those patients have another tear in their meniscus, which those are pretty staggering statistics.
Dr. Brandon Seifer, Lincoln Orthopedic Center at Jock Doc Wednesday. We're talking Josh Hamilton, another knee procedure for him. Dr. Brandon, the rehab part of it is embraced as a challenge, and it's just something you got to overcome. It's that that competitive spirit that gets athletes through it a lot of times. But from a physical standpoint, not to dwell on this fact of it too much, but what new types of rehab, or is it kind of the same type of rehab you'll do to nurse yourself back to health? I know not all knee injuries are the same or created equally, but we just kind of documented the number of surgeries he's had total in his career. Is there a point where you have to do different types of rehab to restore your body back to some sort of workable athleticism?
Yeah, you know, great question. So, you know, just basics of, you know, meniscal work, cartilage work in the knee. So as you go in there, you know, typically we do this arthroscopically, you know, two little poke holes in the knee, not a very long case by any means. And then obviously getting started into rehab right away is important. And so there's two pathways here. So number one, if you go in and just clean things up, don't have to sew the meniscus back together, you can put patients really on a very accelerated rehab program where they might actually return back to competition in 3 or 4 weeks. You know, kind of 6 weeks at the latest. And that's kind of, you know, ideal in a situation where, you know, you want to try to get back quickly. That's kind of what you think about. But again, you're kind of shooting for more kind of acute short-term gains in that situation. On the flip side, if you're talking about doing a meniscus repair, then you really do need to protect that repair. You know, there's some folks out there that have been pretty aggressive about their post-op rehab protocols in those patients. And I think patients really get into trouble when you start to do that. You know, there's kind of always somebody's trying to always kind of push the envelope on the rehab, get back faster, do more things earlier on. And when it comes to meniscus repairs, they're pretty fragile. And so that's a mistake I see a lot of people make, is they tend to push them too hard too early, and potentially you could cause that meniscus repair to fail. And so my thoughts on those things are, you know, you still need to take a pretty conservative approach with that. And it sounds like that's what they're going to do with him if they repair it. In the sense of, he'd probably be non-weight bearing for a couple weeks, minimize some of the knee range of motion for a couple of weeks before you really start to get aggressive with his rehab. And when you look at a kind of meniscus repair rehab, you know, your return to play could be 2 or 3 months, as opposed to quick little cleanup, your back plane in a couple weeks. So those are kind of the two big kind of rehab arms. Obviously, there's a lot of debate associated with, you know, the meniscus repair and how do you rehab them. But again, I still think in that situation, you're better off, especially as like a young athlete, being really smart and taking the time, being conservative, giving that meniscus the best chance to heal, because it does make a big difference. In fact, I was just at a big national sports conference, a bunch of NFL guys, and we talked about, you know, what are some factors that change kind of the longevity of an NFL player's career. And so they looked at a couple of things, like an ACL injury with reconstruction, a meniscus surgery with repair versus meniscus surgery, we just clean it out. And what actually was very interesting, the player with the shortest NFL lifespan was actually the player who had the simplest surgery, which was a scope with a cleanup of the meniscus as opposed to a repair. And in fact, even your guys who had an ACL surgery done without meniscus stuff actually had a longer career than the meniscus guys. And it was a pretty high-level, high-number study, which was kind of eye-opening when you look at the importance of a meniscus, say, in a football guy. Obviously, that's football. Maybe that's different for baseball or, you know, basketball. It just depends. So we understand the meniscus is very important. You know, if you can save it, you got to try to fix it. And that's really kind of the big push that we're seeing in sports med right now. And so I assume that's what they're trying to do with Josh, is try to get him another repair and hopefully take the time to let it heal.
Josh Hamilton, our topic at Jock Doc Wednesday, Lincoln Orthopedic Center, Dr. Brandon Seifert at Jock Doc Wednesday. Dr. Brandon, about a minute here. Just in a nutshell, why do you think, why is the meniscus so fragile? Why is that part of your body just so temperamental?
Yeah, I know. It's the big issue with it is, you know, once you get in that situation where you damage it, you really do change kind of the whole structural properties of that meniscus. And so once you have kind of that first tear, you change kind of the front edge of it, and then it makes it more fragile. You know, some of the nutrients that are involved with that tend to not be as readily available after that first injury. You tend to have more kind of thickening of the meniscus or even some crystallization of it, which makes it more fragile, which makes you more set up to more tears. In addition to it, even having some of those smaller tears does change the function some in your knee. So if you're a high-level athlete pushing and putting a lot of force through your knee, you've kind of changed some of those mechanics in your knee, and now there probably is even more pressure and burden being placed upon that meniscus because of that. And so it really does kind of get you of that kind of chronic re-tear, re-injury pathway.
Dr. Brandon Seifert, Dr. Brandon, good stuff, and thanks for a few minutes today.
Absolutely, Chris. You guys take care.
Subscribe to Hail Varsity Magazine. Call 1-855-3-HUSKER or go to HailVarsity.com/subscribe.
That's amazing!
Now, back to the show with Chris Schmidt and Jay Moore.
Good stuff today. Thanks for your time. Thanks for tuning in. Big thanks to Jerry DiNardo, Mike Schuhart today, tomorrow. We'll get the wide receiver lowdown. Brandon Kenny is going to join us for an interview. Andy Markowski will be talking Husker hoops as Nebraska heads to Gooferland. And Divine Azigbo, Husker tailback, Husker eyeback, will join the show Friday. How about Levante David? Excited to have Levante. I promise.
You were working on him.
Jay's like, shut up.
I saw him on Saturday at the Team Jack deal, sure. And I just said, when are you coming on the show?
And he said, never.
Yeah, he says, I don't like that Schmidt guy. So
get in line. It doesn't matter. I just tell him, hey, I will step out. Jay Moore will do the interview. And then Levante's, yeah, so you're in Friday. You don't know this.
Okay, nice.
You're like, yeah, whatever, dude. All right, let's get you a chance at some Willie Nelson tickets. Left-handed trivia continues. Predictable, I know, but I like this song. All right, you've hopefully been the one to say Boomer Esiason and Phil Mickelson. 466-3776, 466-3776, 1-800-825-5865. Here we go. This 6'10", 10-time All-Star, one of the tallest players to play Major League Baseball. He regularly threw, don't say it, threw over 100 miles per hour. He once killed a bird during spring training, won the World Series in 2001 with the Diamondbacks. And if you talk to any of his Team USA teammates in 1984, had major back knee.
He is now like a professional photographer.
Yeah. And then when he signed with the Yankees, he
says, was he with the Yankees post Diamondbacks?
I think so.
Because he was with the Mariners forever.
Yeah. It was him and Mark Langston and Junior and Buehner and Martinez. I love that Mariners team.
I mean, Ken Griffey Jr. baseball on Super Nintendo.
Oh, I love it.
Squad.
No, it was good. It was good. So, do we have a winner? Maybe. We do? Oh, yeah. DJ's like, shut up. We got a winner. The big unit, Randy Johnson, is the correct answer. If you did not get in time, or you just couldn't get through, our apologies.
Word on the street is that that's what you called yourself in high school in your baseball days. Your nickname.
The big unit.
Yeah.
I was the big batting practice. Bird, listen, I can't lie. I was unable to make the 1995 or 1996 Southeast Knights baseball team. I know that shocks you. I've been listening to your conditioning and summer story or summer conditioning and winter conditioning stories about Callahan grinding you poor bastards down to a nub. I could make it around the track twice. I was asked to leave. Deservedly so. I hear your stories, and I just shamefully acknowledge that, yeah, the track around Prosh Activity Center, we're not friends. Some of us didn't make it two times around. And this is before I got D cups and a boiler. I was a little thinner back then. DJ says it's time to be quiet and leave. So, that'll be on the agenda tomorrow. More Nebraska football thoughts, some Husker basketball, and Husker I-back Divine Ozigbo, Andy Markowski, Brandon Kenny tomorrow, Levante David later this week. Mike Shuhart, Husker Golf, Wilderness Ridge, thanks to you, Shuey. Thanks to Coach DiNardo, even on vacation. TJ Henning's awesome. Jay Moore, your money. Chris Schmidt, back at you tomorrow at 4 on Hail Varsity. Take care.